Isn't that a great song? Our family are huge fans of Chris Rea, and he's got a fabulous voice and writes all his own material. That's Looking for the Summer by Chris Rea. And pretty apt with the weather that's coming in front of us. We are looking for the summer. It's 16 minutes past 10 here on your community radio station, Adelaide's Coast FM. And my guests with me now, David Retallick, who's the CEO of FCT Flames, and Mark Ryan, who's the General Manager for Business Development. FCT Flames, what is it? Well, I'm going to paint a picture for you. And David said this: I cannot express the amount of pride and sense of achievement that is felt within when the world watches your design explode into life. You see, I design Olympic flames. Trained as a mechanical engineer with extensive industrial experience in combustion and high-temperature processes, David Retallick entered the realm of Olympic torches and cauldrons in the lead-up to the Sydney 2000 Olympics, and that's all the way it started. David and Mark, welcome.
Good morning, Rob.
Great to have you here. David, what were you doing prior to this, prior to 2000? What was your company making?
Yeah, well, prior to 2000, the company was, and still is, involved in high-temperature combustion. We run a company called FCT Combustion.
Yes.
And it supplies burner systems to the cement industry, lime, alumina, anything with a high-temperature rotary kiln.
Right. And you'll have to excuse my ignorance, because all of that's double Dutch to me. But, I mean, basically I've got the gist of it. And was that an area that was successful was there a lot of that work about?
Yeah, well, I mean, the business has been running since 1982, I think it was.
Right.
Started in the UK.
Yep.
And then was part of the Adelaide Brighton cement group.
Ah, yes.
In the 90s, and then in 99 we became independent, and we've continued to run that business in parallel to FCT Flames.
And what happened in 2000, obviously prior to 2000, that you thought, I'm going to have a go at building an Olympic flame?
Yeah, well, we've had a long relationship with Adelaide University in the 90s. They developed some low NOx gas burning technology that our company licensed from them.
Yes.
And together, it's been so long I can't actually remember how we got involved with Sydney, but somehow we got involved designing the burner system for the handheld relay torch for the Sydney 2000 Games,
which we have here in the studio.
Yeah, Rob, we've brought a Sydney 2000 Olympic torch in. Now, the listeners can't see it,
no,
but they'll remember that iconic moment when Cathy Freeman bent down in a pool of water,
yes,
and gas, mind you,
yes,
to light it. And it's shaped like the Sydney Opera House. It's white, then a turquoise sort of blue, and then silver. Here, Rob, have a feel of it. It's absolutely fantastic. They're rare as a hen's teeth at the moment, very, very difficult to get, and probably that one's valued at around about 20,000. So they're a real collector's item, and for those that used them or ran with them,
yes,
they were able to keep them.
Or walked with them,
they were able to keep them.
My father has one. Well, he's no longer alive, but he was a walker in Melbourne and walked with one, and my brother now has one of these, and it's obviously worth a lot of money, but it's very attractive, and I think most of us can picture the television footage of showing the people walking the flames or running with the flames as they headed towards Sydney, and in fact here in Adelaide the Annesley College, the girls' school, had a solar powered car, and they moved the torch in the solar powered car up at Mount Barker, and yeah, that was a great sight to see that.
Well, those games were extremely successful for FCT, because FCT did the very large cauldron.
Yes.
Did the torches and did all the flame elements. So that was their first foray into Olympics. And then Con Manius, who's the managing director of the group of companies.
Yes.
He's Greek, and the next major Olympics was in Athens. And so he said, I want Athens. And so they were very, very aggressive at trying to get the Athens Olympics, and incredibly successful. And I think I've got a photo of the Athens.
Yes, you have.
So David can tell you how challenging that one was, and everyone will remember it when you describe it, Rob.
Yes, exactly. I'll hand that back to you, David. Interestingly, from Sydney you then went to Athens. But I was asking you off air, you know, is this a competitive industry? And you were saying, David, that there's most probably only three, possibly four companies that do this type of work in the world. So it's highly specialised, but at the same time, obviously, highly competitive because there's big money involved, I'm imagining.
Well, that's right. I sort of call it a travelling circus. When we go to these, I mean, Sydney spawned a lot of expertise in the games or the opening ceremony
industry
space.
Yes,
and since 2000, we've seen a lot of Australian technical guys and engineers and other show callers and lighting people all at these different events. So in Athens, there was an Australian contingent there. And many events ever since. So we see the same lighting guys, the same staging guys, the same pyro guys, and
Interesting.
And so I think, you know, if you develop some if the client, you know, sort of can rely on you, not yes. you know, to deliver on time. Yeah. You know, you don't get any second chances at the Olympics.
No, you do not.
You know, when they ask you to start the flame, it's got to start. You know, when a few billion people are watching on the television.
Exactly.
You can't go back tomorrow.
No, exactly. In fact, you say here, since Sydney Olympics, FCT Flames work would have been seen by over 20 billion people on the planet. That's extraordinary.
Well, there's a huge television audience. I mean, you know, every time the Olympic opening ceremony is on, the lighting of the cauldron is the grand finale of the event, and
yes.
You know, everyone's waiting to see what's going to be revealed.
Yes. And also, you touched just a little earlier about how you know Australian talent since the year 2000 has now gone and worked on other Olympic games, be it lighting or whatever. Rick Birch, of course. As from what we call him, the artistic creator, is it?
I think that's correct for Sydney.
He went on and did other games.
He did, and also David Atkins
yes.
has been. We've did a number of shows in Qatar for the Asian Games and the Pan Arab Games, and there's been a lot of Australian talent that's spread out around the world now for running these events.
Even Di Henry, OAM, who ran the Sydney Olympic Relay. So she organises Olympic relays where the torches are used.
Oh, yes.
She went right through to London and a few others as well.
So, oh, okay.
So that the Australian nexus inside this industry is very, very highly respected.
Yes.
And pretty much the supplier of choice. So with the competition around the world for these Olympic events, you can imagine it's very, very tough.
Yes,
but
I can.
FCT has delivered every single time, on budget, without fail. And so that track record is almost unheard of, which
yes.
is really, really good.
And David, you were saying that, for example, using Rio as an example, you usually are working about 18 months to 2 years out from the games when they start, when you start bidding for the work and then developing it.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, we start targeting the committee and then trying to find, you know, some contacts within the organisation, and then we start working with their creative, you know, directors to see what they're thinking of.
Yes,
we try and create, you know, the flame effect or the look that they're looking for.
Yes.
Sometimes we have to work with the artistic team to sort of manipulate their thinking a little so to what's possible. But
I was about to say, with artistic people, quite often they can get carried away, and some of the initial designs presented to you, and you think, this is seriously over the top, we can't do that.
Well, that happens quite often. That happens a lot of times, but then we...
Using this as an example...
Well, you're holding the picture of the Olympic rings in the Athens opening ceremony, which was 15-metre diameter rings of fire on a pond of water in the opening ceremony. And
yes.
in that case, we were only given about 4 months to think about that one. The
creative, no one had done that before. So,
no.
So what the creative director came up with was, well, I want the five rings to light in a stadium filled with water in a certain sequence. And it hadn't been done before. The guys had to work with, well, the range of gases to use, what colour flame has the flame got to be, how do you sequence it so that it runs through the water, and it had never been done before. And so...
One more thing, is it safe?
Oh, well, absolutely. Absolutely. And actually, that's a a very good point, because when the Sydney Olympics was done, the cauldron was designed by the architects, and it was going to sit at the top echelon of the actual Olympic stadium.
Yes.
And David's crew did testing on the size of the flame and what the weather would have on it. And actually, the model that was demanded to be built, at 60 or 70 kilometre winds, the flame could actually come around under the cauldron and touch some of the people on the head. Whoa. So that safety is really important. And the FCT guy said, no, we need to change the design and move it up 6 metres.
Yes.
So that possibly can't happen. And that's exactly what happened. The designers agreed to that change. So safety is paramount.
I remember, I'm showing my age, but in 1956 when Ron Clark did the lap of the MCG in Melbourne and then went up the steps to light the cauldron in 1956, he actually burnt his arm, not badly, but nevertheless, you know, had this dip over the side with and light the flame, and it got him on the arm. So,
well, the safety is really if you look at Cathy Freeman walks into a pool of water.
Yes.
And you can see the gas rings around her. So she's standing inside the burner ring of a very, very large barbecue. So the FCT guys, you know, the gas had to be turned on at the right time.
Yes.
And she had no delay of putting the flame down. And the gas had to be a certain type of gas so it didn't flash, like you get in a barbecue.
Yes.
So safety is absolutely paramount in everything that FCT does.
So you're working now, well, I imagine you're thinking about Japan, but of course nothing's official.
No, look, nothing's official yet. We'll be approaching Japan in due course.
Mm.
Normally, 18 months or 2 years out, they start getting their team together, and that's when they start thinking about what the cauldron might look like, what the show's opening ceremony and closing ceremony is going to look like, how the cauldron will integrate with the show.
Yes.
So it's a little early for Japan, but there's other events on in the meantime.
Such as?
Well, next year there's the Martial Arts Games in Turkmenistan.
Mm-hmm.
We're involved in that project. And we're working on the Universiade Games in Kazakhstan next year.
Right.
And there's a range of these sorts of events that we never thought about in the early days, and that's why it sort of explains the gap between 2000 and 2004.
Mm.
We thought there was only the summer games, and then we realised there was summer and then the winter. And then,
and excuse my ignorance, have you done Winter Olympics?
We have done the Winter Olympics. We've done in Vancouver in 2010.
Right.
Sochi?
Sochi. Did, yeah, Sochi. The Winter Games in Sochi.
Yes.
Hmm. And Lillehammer had the Youth Olympics. They were Winter Games. We supplied some torches to the Youth Olympics in Lillehammer this year.
So just there's far more events than just an Olympic Games every 4 years.
Oh, yes. Just to put it in perspective for the listeners, when we first started, everyone thinks of the Olympic Games.
Yes.
But in the year before the Olympics, there's a major work up around the world, and we really discovered this in 2015, last year. The Europeans had a major sporting event right across the continent.
Yes.
And that was the inaugural European Games in Baku, where we were asked to build a Burning Man. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Yes.
And then the Southeast Asian Games were held in Singapore, and the Pan American Games were held in Toronto. And FCT won every single major elite sporting event across the world that used flame. So in 2015, they've raised themselves to global dominance, and it's all export dollars.
Yes.
We had over 400% growth for a little South Australian company in that year, and then rolled on to the Rio Olympics. So, Rob, you know, the listeners, there's so much to this elite sports game.
Absolutely.
And so much FCT flames that the sky's the limit, and
so
we're chasing for that.
Where is the company based?
Well, we're based in Theberton, in the Adelaide University precinct down there,
technology
precinct.
Yes, just near the river.
Just near the river,
that's
correct,
yes, I can picture that.
Yeah, behind the brewery.
Yes, yeah, very handy.
We've been there since about 98, I think. And
how many do you employ?
We've got about 25 employees in Adelaide. We've got an office in America, a company in Turkey. So we're sort of globalising a little. We've got operating companies outside of Australia. But in Adelaide, we've got about 25, a range of engineers, PhD engineers with combustion degrees, mechanical guys, electrical The admin team and marketing and so on, all based in Adelaide. So Adelaide is the head office of the company.
Yes.
And they've got a cell of state-of-the-art computer modelling for flames, CFD.
Yes.
So what that does is that backs up everything that we do.
Yes.
And the listeners need to realise that with each games, a creative person like David Atkins or Birch or some of these very, very top creative designers, they're employed to put on an opening ceremony that blitzes everything that's before.
Of course.
So if you remember Rio, the stage itself was raising and lowering as those buildings were coming up and down, and all those athletes were running across and jumping and parkouring from that perspective. But in Baku, they had exactly the same thing, except the Burning Man had to be created on a wooden floor, and that was probably the most challenging flame effect that FCT's ever had to do. We've got a photo of it there.
Yes.
So if the listeners can imagine a soccer stadium with a Burning Man laid out on it. David, how many metres was it, and what was the challenge for you as the sort of the engineer to keep it all safe and working so that each element of the body came to life with flame in sequence?
Yeah, well, I mean, the creative brief was that we were to represent all the arteries of the body of a man.
Yes.
And we had 600 metres of individual burner length spread over the stage. I think the whole man was about 60 metres long and 20 metres wide.
Heavens.
And
you could see it from space.
And we had a very large gas distribution system under the stage. We had to, as Mark said, parts of the stage were moving up and down on scissor lifts, so we had to have some of the equipment mounted under the scissor lift and connected with flexible hoses and so on. And as Mark said, safety is our prime concern, so we had to make sure that we had ignition systems on each burner segment. And we had to sequence it to light up with a PLC, programmable logic controller. And
what a project!
We did a lot of test work in our workshop beforehand. We built a stage. We had to, it was a timber stage that we were dealing with, so we had to find some way to keep the flames from setting the stage on fire, and again create the look, the colour, and the timing. So a lot of man hours of the team go into research.
So that's the Burning Man. Tell us about the eclipse.
Well, the eclipse was the grand finale of the opening ceremony. The creative team wanted to have an eclipse of the sun, so they had a disc that was 5 metres in diameter, and they wanted the flame to come uniformly from the circumference of the disc.
Yes.
And the challenge was to get the flame to sort of radiate downwards. If you light a match, the flame always wants to lift. Doesn't matter which way you have the match, the flames always wants to lift vertically. So we ended up having to design an air curtain and have the gas injected in the middle of the air curtain so that it would force the flame downwards at the bottom of the disc. So it was a challenge, and a lot of research in our workshop before we got to site.
And another thing that you're working on is the flaming fountain.
Yes, we're looking to expand out of into other markets other than sporting events. It can be lumpy, as you can appreciate.
Yes.
Some years there's a lot of events on, and last year or this year with the Olympics, only really the Olympics was on. So it can be a lumpy business, and we've been starting to think about expanding out into other markets, and we're looking at theme parks and fountain and fire shows.
Such as in Las Vegas or Dubai.
Yeah, the really big ones,
the
big musical fountains. A lot of listeners would have been to Las Vegas or seen Bellagio.
Yes. Well, even I'm thinking of the water fountain outside the casino in Melbourne.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And there's a classic example, because Casino in Melbourne, the Crown, has 8 pillars with major flames on it.
Yes.
And we were across there talking to them only last year, I think it was, and Casino said, oh, look, we're thinking of pulling the towers down and stopping the flames. And we said, stop. You can't do that, because it's so iconic. Everyone knows you, that you're the cinema. So what we've done with this flaming fountain, and if listeners can imagine a commercially provided, very, very tall shooting fountain that that you would see at one of these big shows. Or even if you go down to the River Torrens, there's a fountain in the network there. And then having a flame living inside the water body of the fountain. And it's just illogical. How can you do that? Water puts flame out. And here there's a flame living inside it. So it goes up and down the sort of water column.
Yes.
And it's unique in the world for what these guys have been able to achieve. And we're looking at putting that to the market for all these big flame, all these big fountain companies and water companies, probably in the next 6 months. So it truly is an absolutely fantastic opportunity. And people, when you see it in live action, it just stops you in your tracks. And you just, how can that be? It's not, you know, how can they do that? And you can watch it for 10 minutes and still not know.
It really
is a showstopper.
It's interesting you talk about such as the Flaming Fountain and developing your work further when there isn't a lot of activity with Olympic Games every 6 months. Would part of the reason also be that there seems to be now a pitch within the Olympic Games movements that they can no longer spend the amounts of money that some of the games were seriously over the top, and starting with Rio, they've had to down their budget or bring in their budget, and I'm wondering whether that's going to happen in years to come, and so you've got to adjust accordingly.
Rio certainly did have some budget constraints, and but they still managed to put on a very spectacular show.
Yes,
and we were proud to be involved and did what we could to help them out. And
but I'm just thinking, David, moving forward, will budgets start to be restrained? And so
I think that we are seeing that in a lot of events at the moment. That a lot of oil-rich countries are struggling with their budgets, and I think you're right. I think the budgets, maybe the Olympic events may sort of trim their budgets a little.
Yes.
But
so you're very wise in looking over the shoulder and looking at places like Las Vegas and Dubai and other places, and I think that's...
Well, we're targeting a whole range of flame events around the world. For example, theme parks.
Yes.
Theme parks are becoming very, very attractive for tourists, and they're in a massive growth industry. So flames in theme parks, anything to do with special effect flames.
Yes.
And we were talking recently with Ferrari World in Dubai.
Yes.
They wanted their roller coaster, which runs outside the building and then inside the building, to go through a curtain of flame.
Wow.
And so we were talking to them about that, because everyone's looking for that extra level of experience. So theme parks, we're quite well engaged with at the moment, and David's going across to the biggest theme park conference in November in Orlando, so we're engaged with that. The other thing is, most people will remember, of our vintage anyway, the Anzac flame and the Memorial flame. So 2018 is the anniversary of World War One, the closure of World War One, and if you remember 2015, last year, the Gallipoli torch, the silver torch, mm-hmm. that all the RSLs held,
yes.
well, that was produced by FCT Flames.
Uh-huh.
We did that for the RSL and the 100th anniversary of Gallipoli, and now we're looking at some of the other nations. We're certainly talking to some of the Middle Eastern nations about how they honour their martyrs, and Europe, how they honour the memory of lost soldiers, because there's nothing more spectacular than that memorial flame, the eternal flame.
Yes.
So we're very much chasing that as well, and doing very well at that, and other sporting events that are happening outside of the elite game, moving it down a notch as well.
And finally, because time's run away from us, what about a permanent flame here in Adelaide? What I've got in mind is something right outside Coast FM. But something in Adelaide, I mean, this is your hometown. Have you not been approached by the City Council? I'm surprised that there hasn't been an approach.
Well, we have made an approach to them, funnily enough. As Mark said, we have proposed a fountain and flame show to the City Council.
Right.
There was some level of interest there, but again, I think budget constraints are maybe acting against it, but you never know. We're hopeful. We'd love to have something down the Torrens.
Especially with the investment that's going into the River Torrens, the riverbank at the moment.
Absolutely.
We put a proposal for a world-class musical fountain and flame show with lasers and projectors in a section of the Torrens that was by the footbridge,
mm-hmm.
but wouldn't interfere with the rowing. It got really good support from government. However, at the stage, I don't think there was funding for that. But it's still with government at the moment. And can you imagine having our own Fountain and Flame show in Adelaide? It would drive the
fabulous
tourist dollar like you wouldn't believe here.
Oh, I think it's fantastic. And I'm a rower, and the club that I belong to is down on the river there. So
right, so yes.
I think it'd be spectacular.
Mm. It would, for sure. But we'll keep pushing
on. And
away.
I think the Victoria Square upgrade has a flame element with an Aboriginal linkage to it on the northern end of Victoria Square, just above those water bubblers
yes.
that are bubbling there.
Yes.
And I think the government is waiting to see what it's going to do with the tram tracks before they look at that again. So we know that's on train. But apart from that, there's been no other discussion with people of influence over a serious fame. And a lot of people don't even know we're here. FCT's operated under the radar.
Exactly.
Listeners most likely would never have heard of us before.
No.
And yet we rule the world in that flame activity.
There's no question. Well, I think initially let's just plan a mini one here at the Glendore Community Centre, right outside our front door, and we'll just spread the word.
Absolutely.
Look, thank you for joining me this morning. It's been fabulous for me, and I think it's been fabulous for everyone else, because success stories are very important, and it's happened right here in Adelaide. My guest this morning, David Retallick, who's the CEO of FCT Flames, and Mark Ryan, the General Manager of Business Development. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you, Rob.
Listeners.
Thank you.
It's been great. It's 19 minutes to 11 here on your community radio station, Adelaide's Coast FM.